Better Leaders, Better Schools, episode number 28.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
I would always give them this advice, you know, be patient, do things slowly. You know, I think there's always a rush when you're young and, you know, brand new to a school or whatever. To find all of the obvious problems, and they will be there. They will be ever present. You know, I used to joke with principals that I've never met a principal who replaced a good principal. And what I mean by that is it's easy to walk into a school and find its faults.
Hey, this is Daniel Bauer from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I help school leaders create a winning culture, focus on the essential, and lead with courage and integrity. The blog and podcast was made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Get more content and resources at betterleadersbetterschools.com. Better Leaders, are you looking to upgrade your leadership potential? I have another free gift for you. This one is a PDF which I call 15 questions guaranteed to unlock your leadership potential. Unlock your leadership potential now for free by texting UNLOCK NOW. That's all one word, no spaces, to 33444. Text UNLOCK NOW to 33444 for your free gift. 15 questions guaranteed to unlock your leadership potential. Better Leaders, I need your help. I invest time, creativity, and money to bring you the blog and podcast whose sole purpose is to develop your leadership capacity. I'm asking you to take a more active role in the show. Will you become a sponsor and help me cover the cost of creating, producing, and hosting the blog and podcast? In the show notes, there is a link where it asks you to become a patron of the show. I'm asking you to donate anywhere between $1 to $5 a month to help offset the cost of creating, producing, and publishing Better Leaders, Better Schools. At $10 a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every 60 days. If you have gotten any type of value from this show and would like to invest in Better Leaders, Better Schools, then please click the patron link. If you can't financially support the show at this time, then please consider leaving a rating and review, which helps the podcast reach more listeners. Today's podcast is brought to you by the book Reclaiming the Classroom by Trenton Goebel. This new book, Reclaiming the Classroom, offers a case for today's teachers to regain control of K-12 education and change the conversation around learning. I know Trenton. He's a great guy who brought us Mastery Connect, and I'm looking forward to checking out this book. You should get it too at reclaimingtheclassroom.com. And now it's time for some five-star reviews. Gene_HPLN writes, great show. I'm a leadership coach and a parent educating my two kids. I really appreciate the topics covered in the podcast. Thanks for the show. Thank you, Gene, for the rating and review. Very much excited to bring you today's episode, episode 28 with Trenton Goebel. So much good stuff that he shared. Some of the things that I really appreciated was what autonomy is and why it's so important to success. Why you should replace your staff meeting with 5-minute standing meetings at the beginning of school. If you want to become a hero at your school, how to do that? Hint, stop wasting the teacher's time. And, you know, Trenton is the author of Reclaiming the Classroom, so we'll be unpacking what that book's about as well. There's a link to buy the book in the show notes. So thank you so much for listening. It always means so much to me, and I hope you get a lot of value out of this show. Trenton has been inspired by the work of his own K-12 teachers and spent a 20-year career in public schools. He taught several grade levels, served as an assistant principal, was an elementary school principal for 11 years. As an administrator, he won numerous awards for innovation and educational excellence, including Rookie Principal of the Year and Principal Innovator of the Year. In 2009, he co-founded Mastery Connect, a mastery learning platform designed to help K-12 educators measure student growth against any set of standards. In 2012, he left his position as principal to become the Mastery Connect Chief Learning Officer. In this role, he remains a passionate advocate for American educators traveling the country, helping schools and districts implement mastery learning. Trenton married his high school sweetheart, Amy, who is now a history teacher. They live in Salt Lake City with their two children, Elliot and Maggie. He holds a master's in education in instructional technology from Utah State University. So, Trent, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
It's interesting. I think, like most educators, I went into public education because I had a real desire to make a difference. I'd had some really good teachers. I was fortunate to have really good teachers who I think made the teaching profession look very appealing. I think more than anything else, I liked the idea of having some degree of autonomy in my professional life and a level of creativity that would allow me to really hopefully reach kids at lots of different levels. So I think education was very appealing from the very beginning.
And you have a new book. I want to start there. Very excited about it. You guys are actually the sponsors of the Better Leaders, Better Schools. So shout out to you and Reclaiming the Classroom. But where did this idea come from? What pushed you to produce this book for the education community?
When I started a software company, we had long ago talked about the idea that it would be great to have a book that philosophically aligned to the work that we do at Mastery Connect. And it's one thing to sit and talk about it. We talked about it for a couple of years and decided that, you know, the time was right. And so about 3 years ago, I started the writing process. I thought it would take me, you know, a couple of months. It took me 3 years.
Yes,
it was a much
3 years
much
ago.
Yeah, much more involved process. And the interesting thing was it wasn't for a shortage of things to write. I found myself writing a lot, pretty prolific, had developed just a ton of content. And the real challenge that I had was taking all of that content and actually culling it down into a book that I think would be easy for teachers to grab a hold of, read it, and hopefully relate to. At the height of the book, we had about 120,000 words, and culled that down all the way down to about 40,000 words. So that it's, whoa. Yeah, it's a very quick read. I think it's a good book, and more than anything, it aligns philosophically with, you know, what I believe is most important in our schools.
Can you stay there for a moment and talk about that philosophy and what you think is most important?
Yeah. So philosophically, you know, it's been interesting for me over the last 20 years to watch as I think education has evolved. And I don't know that it's necessarily evolved for the better. In the book, we talk a lot about this idea that teachers, and if we want to have successful schools, we need to have teachers who have a degree of autonomy, the ability to go in and really relate to the kids on not just an academic level, but also understanding that the work that teachers do is really, it's a series of complex human events. And in order to be a successful teacher, I think you have to have the autonomy to create. I think you have to have support from administration around that. And more than anything else, when I talk about reclaiming the classroom, what I'm really talking about reclaiming is that degree of autonomy. And where I think we lost that was in this drive for test scores that occurred post No Child Left Behind. I think over that period of time, I was guilty of this myself as an administrator, becoming somewhat obsessive over increasing student test scores. And in the process, that high focus on this very narrow band of standards, subject area, we lost what was most important in our classrooms. We became so hyper focused on those test scores that we somehow, you know, gave up a lot of the autonomy that teachers had enjoyed, or at least I enjoyed throughout my career as a teacher. And I feel very strongly that education is a very complex environment, and it's almost impossible to boil down the work that teachers do to a single test score.
Absolutely. And people that are listening, the better leaders that listen, they're very aware that we use Mastery Connect at our school. I'm a big fan of the software that you've created. I'm wondering if folks aren't, one, familiar with Mastery Connect, two, not familiar with how professional learning communities work. It almost could sound maybe to an outsider ironic that you say there's this obsession with testing, and then there's a software company that helps people pore over data, you know, and makes it easier. So can you maybe dispel some of the myths of that type of thinking and kind of really describe what Master Connect does for the teacher in the school and why it is such a valuable tool?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. And I think about it a lot myself, actually. It sounds a little paradoxical to, on the one hand, kind of rail against testing, and on the other hand, have started a company that's really foundations are in assessment. And I think the difference is really defining those two areas. The things that I rail against are single test scores, high stakes testing.
Yes.
The things that we have that's been embraced legislatively through No Child Left Behind. And then what I think matters most, and you mentioned professional learning communities, Mastery Connect was really built around this idea that assessment belongs in the hands of teachers.
Yep.
And the purpose for that is really that teachers use that data. We talk about the big three reasons. It's really about identifying levels of understanding in your students. And when I think of assessment, I think of it in a very broad term. From, it could be a formalized paper pencil type assessment, like most people, you know, think of when you think of an assessment or a test. But I also think of it in terms of a teacher observation, a student project, you know, something like that, a performance that you're measuring based on a rubric. And so we identify levels of understanding so that we can target students across the spectrum of learning for intervention. So if I have students that are advanced, I'm identifying that so that I can then provide them support along the way in the same way that I would do for students who are struggling. And the third reason is really about teachers utilizing that data to evaluate their own practice. I think that's probably one of the most important things we do as teachers, is we're constantly evaluating whether or not what we're doing in the classroom is working. And so from a software perspective, we developed Mastery Connect with the idea that teachers are the ones that should be really managing how they assess their students, how they gather that data, and how they utilize that data. And I think there's a very strong difference there between teachers feeling beholden to an assessment that they feel they have no control over,
right,
and that data then is used to somehow determine whether or not they're doing an effective job. So that, I think that's kind of the difference, and it's how Mastery Connect came about, was really me trying to provide my teachers with those resources as a school principal that they needed to address those big three elements: identifying levels of understanding, targeting students for intervention, and really using data to evaluate their own practice.
You know, and you practice what you preach. Like I said, we use Mastery Connect at our school. And anytime we've hit a roadblock or needed some training or whatever, you guys are always so helpful and quick in your response to make sure that the teachers on the front lines can get what they need as quickly as possible to make those adjustments to serve our kids, to create a really positive educational experience. And that's the challenge that we're giving the listeners of this show. How can you figure out how to give your teachers more autonomy? How can you put more power and authority into their hands, so it's not these, well, one size fit all, you know, every now and then type tests where all the eggs are in one basket, as opposed to what they do on a day-to-day basis to measure student learning and understanding, so that we can really tell our own narrative of how special our students are and the wonderful things that they're accomplishing. So Trenton, as a principal, and now as a leader at Mastery Connect, how did you fight that obsession over test scores? Because it's very real, you know. We have our superintendents and people above us that are wanting us to increase the scores. So that's a hard line to toe. What did you do?
You know, I think a lot of it is where, especially as a school leader, where do you place your emphasis? And so for me, when I was young in the profession, you know, and I was trying to make my mark, and I really, this is, I'm going to kind of admit my own failings here, but when I saw the data on those end of level test scores as being reflective of my work, I think that that right there was a good example of being disconnected from what matters most. And that is, you know, what is happening every single day in our classrooms. And the more I began to realize that, you know, what I need is I need teachers who are every single day focused in on their kids in a big, broad kind of perspective. I think the most important thing that teachers do every single day is connect with their kids to make sure that those kids feel safe, to make sure that there's an adult in the classroom who sees those children and their potential as more than just, you know, the kind of the academic pursuit, but that whole child perspective. Beyond that, it's making sure that we are understanding what their needs are academically, and we're providing for those needs. And so as a principal, I think I had a huge shift when I stopped and said, you know what, I just don't care what the end of level tests say.
Yes.
You know, what I care most about is what's happening every day. And if we're doing the right things every single day in our classroom, the end of level test scores will take care of themselves.
I was just curious, was there a moment that opened your eyes to that, where you made that pivot?
Yeah, there was. And it's kind of a long story. I'll keep it short. But I actually had a very transformative experience, and it took place in about a 24-hour period. I had this amazing third grade teacher who came to my office and asked me a seemingly simple question. She brought in our standards-based report card that we had been using for years in the district. And she just said, Trent, you need to tell everybody in the school how you want us to fill out this report card. And to be honest, as a principal, I hadn't even looked at it all that in depth. I didn't have to fill them out. I trusted my teachers that they were doing it. And I didn't really understand her question. But really what it boiled down to is about half the teachers in my building were filling out our standards-based report card like a traditional report card. You know, they were, you know, just transposing a 4 was equivalent to an A, a 3 was equivalent to a B, a 2 was equivalent to a C, that sort of thing. They were just collecting, you know, total points, extra credit, all of that other stuff. And whatever it came out to at the end, if in the grade book it said it was an A, the kid got a 4. And that really wasn't what it was meant to be. And so I just said, well, you know what? Let's have a quick faculty meeting. Let's talk about it as a faculty. I didn't think it was going to be a big deal. I thought I would walk in there and just say, all right, you know, let's talk about how we're filling out the report cards. And we would all walk out agreeing that their standards-based report cards and what we're measuring is what students know and don't know. What happened was the faculty was pretty split. There were people who were absolutely committed to the idea that it didn't, you know, that when we grade students, the effort and whether or not kids are turning work on time, whether or not they are respectful, all of those things should be counted toward the final grade. And where it hit me was, we weren't able to come to any consensus in that faculty meeting, but like you'll relate to this, after faculty meeting, the teachers kind of gather around and they talk about things in small groups form, and you know, they're kind of picking sides. And I was having a conversation with a group of teachers, and one of the teachers who taught our most advanced reading group happened to say to me, I'm going to give all of my students 3s. On their report card for the reading section. And when I inquired why, she said, well, it's because I want those kids to know that they need to continue to work hard. I don't want them to think that they just got a 4 and that they don't have to continue working hard, which was very problematic for me, seeing as my son was in her class. And I was going to have to explain to my wife why it was that my child, who has worked really hard, who takes great pride in being advanced and everything else, that it's going to read on his report card that he is not reading proficiently, because his teacher wants to use that grade as an incentive. And so that's a little bit of a long story, but it just hit me right in that moment that grades are not things that we use as power pieces in our classrooms, that grades, whatever format you use, whether it's a standards-based grade or a traditional grade, is supposed to be reflective of where our kids are at. And this is an important part of the communication process that we have with parents. You know, as a parent, I want to know is my child learning? Are there deficiencies that we can support them with at home? And if they're struggling, what are you doing to support them? And if they're advanced, what are you doing to help them continue to grow and improve and be engaged at school? So anyway, that's my long story, but that was for me a key turning point.
No, I really appreciate you sharing it. And, you know, I felt like I was right there in the faculty meeting with you. So, you know, and that's a struggle I think a lot of schools go through. What are the purpose of grades? What do they reflect? And the key point, too, for the listeners, you know, despite if you're more of the traditional style or standards-based style, are you communicating to the parents, to the students? Do they know without a shadow of a doubt what that number means or what that letter means? And it's so important and definitely a challenge for us all as leaders. I know you said, so you pivoted from having this obsession with test scores to a focus on the kids and our teachers really connecting with their students. This is messy stuff in terms of how do you measure it. So I agree, that's really what we should be looking for. From our staff, but how did you know that whatever teacher, you know, is actually doing that at a high level? How did you go about measuring that?
You know, I think this is one of the key things that for me is what I enjoyed most about the principalship, and that is you have to be you can't look for that information on a piece of paper and some chart.
Yeah.
You know, you actually have to be engaged in what's going on in the school and being in classrooms, not for a formal observation, not when teachers are feeling threatened by your very presence in the room, but because you want to be there, because you want to be part of what's going on. And so I think a lot of it is there's a lot of things that we just can't measure. I would say that some of the probably the vast majority of the most important things teachers do every day in the classroom, we really can't measure when we talk about engaging with kids and building relationships and all those kinds of things. There's not anything that you can really do other than be present in teachers' classrooms, to be present in the lives of kids. You can tell. You know, you can tell when kids are happy, when they're engaged. You can tell when teachers are happy and they're engaged, and when good things are happening in classroom. And the best way I know to be able to confirm that is to actually be present in those classrooms. You know, not necessarily in an overt sort of way, but just purely being in a teacher's classroom and watching that interaction and engaging with kids. It was absolutely, it's the thing I miss most about not working in a school is that ability to just be present in the lives of teachers and students.
Thank you for that answer, Trent. It's, you know, as a younger administrator, I've tried to figure out that balance of doing the office-y type work and paperwork and stuff, and then being connected to the school, being present and really have a understanding of what's happening day in, day out. And it's hard. It's a challenge. On my worst days, I'm stuck in my office and barely get out at all. On my best days, I'm in the classrooms quite a bit, and I never would have learned that unless I started this podcast. It's been uncanny how many people I respect at such a high level like yourself. Literally, almost every guest has said, I use a mobile office. I don't hang out in my office. I go do all that paperwork and everything in the classroom just to be connected to the kids. So want to reiterate that times 1,000. I'm retweeting your comment right now because that is so important. And let's pause right here for a message from our sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by the book Reclaiming the Classroom by Trenton Goble. Are you like me? Are you just sick of testing? Do you have that type of fatigue? Well, I have the solution for you. Reclaiming the Classroom, the book by Trenton Goble, is an in-depth exploration of a political climate that favors high-stakes testing and government mandates over the skillful art of teaching and provides teachers a road back to professionalism, autonomy, and respect. Doesn't that sound nice? Well, it does, and you should get it today at ReclaimingTheClassroom.com. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. the Education Podcast Network, podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. For more great education podcasts, visit edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. And now, back to our show.
Yeah, I think, and I'll just throw out there, I think one of the biggest challenges, especially young administrators, is you get stuck in your office. It's like a black hole. You know, you go in there and it just grabs you. Mm. And it's amazing how you can get caught up in a lot of trivial things.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, those phone calls with parents are important, those types of things. But so much of what you get caught up in is trivial. And here's another thing. And I'll say this from an elementary school perspective. You know, most of the kids that would get sent to my office would come down to my office because they did something during lunch recess. And, you know, it was like, yeah, if I wanted to keep the trivial stuff out of my office, I would go be present out on the playground. You know, I would be present in the hallway. I'd be present after school, you know, when kids are going home or when kids are coming in the morning. If I'm in places where most of my problems occur, the likelihood that any of those things will end up on a piece of paper as a referral to my office diminishes greatly. And I always found that I would always get bogged down in paperwork just because I was present in the office. You know, if I wanted to avoid work, you know, having that work created, I just needed to be out, you know, and I can resolve a million conflicts at lunchtime right on the playground with kids right in the moment. And none of those kids need to come to my office, you know, because most of those issues are much more trivial than it's funny how on a piece of paper when it says these two boys were fighting. And yet when I was out there on the playground, what I saw was two kids who got into an argument while, you know, playing basketball. And just by being present and saying, well, what went on, what was going on, come on, guys, let's get going. That paperwork never entered my office. The problem never got magnified beyond what it really was, which was for me an opportunity to engage with students and help them continue to grow and to learn.
Trenton, you are blowing my mind. This is pure gold for the listeners. I should send you a check after this episode because, wow. You're saying basically, you know, where the problems are, go there and then solve them, you know, or even just observe what's happening and just being present where that stuff is occurring is really going to just probably 99% of the time take care of itself. That's amazing. I really appreciate that.
It really does. I'm amazed. Like if you stop and look at any referral you have on your desk for any disciplinary problem, I guarantee you if you had been there and actually observed what had happened, the opportunity is more of a counseling opportunity
exactly
than it is a disciplinary one.
So, Trent, knowing what you know now, do you have any other advice that you would give a novice principal?
I would say be patient. You know, I was director of elementary schools in a very large district here in Utah, and I worked with a lot of new principals. My job was to supervise principals, and I would always give them this advice. You know, be patient. Do things slowly. You know, I think there's always a rush when you're young and, you know, brand new to a school or whatever, to find all of the obvious problems, and they will be there. They will be ever present. You know, I used to joke with principals that I've never met a principal who replaced a good principal. And what I mean by that is it's easy to walk into a school and find its faults.
Yeah.
And guaranteed the previous principal probably knew they were there too and had focused on, you know, a million other things, you know, and so it's really looking at your situation and realizing hopefully you're going to be there for a long time. And I think a lot of times the more patient you are to make change, and what I mean by that is be knowledgeable about your school. Know the people, know what's going on, know where your capacity is as a leader to support. Don't bite off more than you can chew, and really take some time to get to really know people, know your school, know your community before you pass judgment. Because I was principal of three different elementary schools, and what I learned was they're very different places. Mm-hmm. The complex human events that are public schools, they're complex because every school is different. And Daniel, you know, I've worked with hundreds of schools across the country.
Yep.
They're different because the kids inside those schools are different. The teachers inside those schools are different, you know, and so the effort that you make to really be, to learn about your community, to learn about your teachers, and that by being patient, you'll start to see where the real problems are, the real opportunities to make change. Fix the little things as you go, but don't be in a rush to make judgment about the school that you walk into, because if it was that easy, you know, the last guy probably would have just stepped in there and fixed it all. You know, it is, these are very complex social dynamics, and building trust and relationships with teachers, I think is really important. And I think teachers appreciate that. You have to remember that when you walk into the building as a brand new principal, you're the new guy, you know, and everybody in that school is on edge. They're worried about what you're going to do. Are you going to like them? Are you going to take care of them? Are you going to support them? Are you going to help them build capacity? Or are you going to come in and tear down and point out all of the things they've been doing wrong? And that's just way too easy. And it's also, I think it's disheartening for teachers who probably love their school.
Yeah. Do you have any strategy in terms of, like, I love this idea of being patient and observing and building relationships. Was there any go-to activities that you did to help you accomplish those goals?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I did, and every time I tell people this, they kind of look at me sideways. And I would tell all the principals that I worked with the same thing, and I had a couple that took me up on it. But one of the things that I did was, and this is, it sounds a little bit crazy, but I would, for the first 2 weeks of every school year, I would go in, and I started this in my second school. I didn't do it in my first school, but started in my second school. The first 2 weeks of school, we would have a morning meeting. All of the teachers would come in. They'd bring all of the kids, and it was like an assembly. So I was trying to accomplish a couple of things. One, I wanted to have an environment where all my kids were, because I wanted to be able to communicate with them directly about my expectations for playground behavior, for, you know, this, that, and the other. This was my opportunity to talk to all of the kids. It also gave us an opportunity for teachers. This sounds a little strange, but in elementary school, I think it's important. Gave them an opportunity that teachers could bring their kids down the hallways to have the kids come into an auditorium setting where I could talk about being respectful, because in the future we would have guests who would visit our school. At my second school was a very low-income school, and I think a lot of times when guests came to our school, they made assumptions about our kids. And I wanted to teach them to be respectful, to be appropriate, all of those kinds of things. So for those first 2 weeks, they came down every single morning. We had our morning meeting, and then I would excuse them, and they would go back to class. The second week of that, I always had the teachers leave. So it was just me and the kids, which, you know, when you've got an elementary school with 800-900 kids, that's a lot of kids in an auditorium all by yourself. Yeah. And so it was an opportunity for the teachers to go back to the classroom. It bought them a few minutes before the school day to catch their breath, to make sure they were ready before the kids came in. But then I would excuse the kids one grade level at a time. And I told the teachers, when you would hear the kids coming, come to your door so that, you know, you're out in the hallway.
Sure.
But it said to the kids that I trust you.
Right.
I trust that you guys can leave here, walk down the hall without hitting each other, that you guys are amazing kids, and I would always reinforce that. And then every Monday for the rest of the year, we had a Monday morning meeting where all the kids came in, the teachers would drop them off. I would talk about whatever was going on. Of course, we would do the Pledge of Allegiance, and then I would excuse the kids. The one thing that I always did is I was a K through 6 school, and I would always excuse the 6th grade kids first. And I would say to all the other kids, before I would have the 6th grade kids stand up to leave, I'd always say, you know, these 6th grade kids are the leaders in our school. And I would remind the 6th grade kids that all of the other kids in the school look up to you. They see how you behave. They see, you know, the things that you do, and they want to be like you. And so as you exit the building, I want you to keep in mind that every kid in this school is looking at you. They look up to you. And boy, my 6th graders would get up, and man, they would just quietly just head back to class. It was a way to kind of reinforce their position in the building, but also be good leaders out there on the playground when I wasn't around, to be the kinds of kids that hopefully helped other kids do better. And what's shocking is I would get people who would say, that seems like it's going to take forever. But we would get all of those kids in that auditorium, have a maybe 10-minute quick meeting where we went through, you know, if I was having problems, hey, kids, here's some of the problems we're having. We're having problems on the bus. We're having problems here, here. I need your help in solving those problems. That's not the way kids at Heartland Elementary, you know, I expect better, right? I expect better from you guys. Please help me with this. Those kids would be back in class, you know, 15 minutes after we started. And so it was a very quick thing, but I think it was a way for me to connect with all of my kids in one place, you know, and it built trust and empowerment. I know it sounds a little bit crazy, but it was just my opportunity to be able to be with those students once a week, you know, to reinforce my expectations.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's incredible. And not crazy at all, just incredible. Listeners of the show, longtime listeners know that Paul Erickson, episode 25, he's also an elementary school principal. He does something very similar. So just want to remind listeners to check that out if you want to hear how he held his morning assemblies. But what I love about it is just, like you said, you know, it gives you time to connect with the kids. I love the consistency of it and then sort of the gradual release of time so that it's just then the Mondays. I love that the expectations, you know, just like with your staff, constantly going over the mission, vision, values, what you want, you speak into being. And, you know, these are just young children, but that's the funny thing. You said you have guests that had some assumptions about some of your students. And what you did is you flipped it and you said, here's the expectations I have. And, you know, you better believe that I expect you to meet those. And here's the funny thing. When you actually give that expectation, but then create a space where they can meet those expectations, not only do they meet them, but oftentimes they exceed them. So you would dismiss, they could walk in the halls on their own. And sure, I'm sure there was a problem here and there, but over the long term of it, I bet those kids were walking like little adults on their way to class. And this is a whole school, K through six, and they're getting back to class in 5 minutes. You trusted them. You're building leaders from K through six. That's a beautiful thing. I applaud you for that, Trenton.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting too, because I would also do little things like I would watch as the kids would leave, and I would always afterwards follow up and go up to teachers and say, I don't know if you guys noticed when your kids came back, but this group of kids was incredible.
Right.
It's funny how that kind of reinforcement for kids is very empowering. I was going to say one other thing too that I think is important. I didn't have faculty meetings. I actually did away with the whole concept of faculty meeting out of respect for teachers' time. Okay. What I would do is I would every day I would kind of post on the wall in the office kind of the list of what was going on in the school so that everybody was up to date with it. I would send it out in an email. And what I would tell teachers is if there's ever a time where I need to have a faculty meeting, we will do like 5 minutes before school. And I always did it before school. I did it 5 minutes as a stand-up meeting because the teachers knew the bell would ring and they'd have to be able to go. Mm-hmm. And so I really felt like most of my communication I could do via email. I could do it face-to-face. And in those rare times where I actually had to call a meeting, they were just, this is important announcement. The districts ask us to do this, this, or this. Please make sure we do this, or this is important that we do this. 5 minutes, they would come in, they would stand there, I would tell them what needed to be done, and then they were back. So at the most, I would take up 5 minutes in a week, because faculty meeting to me is, it's funny how as an administrator, it's so easy to get locked into this idea that we have to do these things as tradition.
Yeah.
We create this really, really, really long agenda. We think we're going to keep it to an hour, and an hour and a half later, you get through this agenda and teachers are exhausted and worn out. And it's very counterproductive. Yeah. And I think it doesn't respect teachers' time. Mm-hmm. You know, I never personally sat through a faculty meeting where I went, boy, I'm glad I was here. That was so great. This was such a good use of my time.
Yeah.
And that again sounds counterintuitive. Can you possibly do that where, you know, what about face-to-face with teachers? And to me, you don't build relationships by standing in front of a group of people and talking at them.
Yeah.
You know, you build relationships in their classrooms and hallways. And one of the reasons why I put the agenda in the office by my door was because I wanted teachers to come in every morning, look at the agenda, and I was there present, you know, if they had anything they wanted to say. And so I liked that the office became kind of a central hub for teachers to hang out and talk. And it was a place, I think, that was a very positive environment. And so to me, anytime you can do anything that's respectful of teachers' time, mainly don't waste it.
Right.
I think that goes a long way in building part of your community.
Oh, man. Anytime you don't waste teachers' time, you're a winner. And they're going to love you for that. And again, I'm just so impressed. I'm going to listen to this own episode. You know, normally I don't go back and listen to my own show very often. But this is a masterclass on how to be an incredible school leader by Trenton Goble. And so I want to pick apart just really quick. The meetings before school, love it because you're giving yourself a boundary and you can't go longer than 5 minutes because school starts. So you got to be hyper-focused and only communicate what you need. The agendas in the main office near your office is almost like getting a notification on your phone. You're training your people to come there. It's the central hub, as you said, and they could check in with you if they needed to. It's standing because, you know, we're not sitting down, we're not relaxing. It's, you know, we're going to do this quickly. We're going to get out of the building, respecting teachers' time. You know, I thought I was awesome. You know, I wanted to applaud myself, pat myself on the back because I took traditionally what we used as a 90-minute meeting here, and I cut that down to 45 minutes, and a lot of times we're done in 20, and I thought that was incredible. You set the bar a little bit higher. I got to somehow figure out how to get down to 5 minutes, but that is just absolutely amazing. Again, love it. I'm going to go back and listen to this show. That's so cool. Trent, really interested in how you're going to answer this. If you could create a class, any class at a school, but it's not offered that you know of across our nation, what kind of class would you create and why?
You know, I think I don't know if I could create any class that wasn't offered, but I think I would want to create a class that was very holistic in a sense that I would want learning to be the outcome. I'm just not sure what learning would get done. And what I mean by that is I was very focused on project-based learning, where kids were creating and doing really amazing things. I would select specific standards or ideas that I wanted all of the projects to focus around. But I would do something where it's purely, you know, it's, I wouldn't say it's just kids learning on their own, because I don't see the value in that. What I see the value in is when kids learn together. And so building a project-based environment where kids are coming in, grabbing onto whether it's current events or specific elements, and giving those kids the opportunity to really grow and create together. The one thing that I've found with students, when I first started as a teacher, you know, I was pretty impressed with my ideas. And the thing that's very humbling is when you give students the space to create, when you give students the ability to, and you teach kids really well how to work together, kids will always exceed your expectations. So a lot of times I would create these projects and I would go and I would say, you know, we in my classroom, there might be 8 or 9 projects going on at the same time. Some kids might be creating a play. Some kids might be doing a news broadcast. Some kids might be doing a portfolio, whatever. And all of my bulletin boards were always made in the project environment. The kids love to be able to, you know, write essays, do different things, and have complete control over a bulletin board in my room based on the project they were working on. But what I found is I would come up with these ideas and think, man, I'm really kind of stretching the boundaries. I would give the projects to the students and they would so go beyond what my wildest expectations were.
Yeah.
It would just blow my mind. And so I think a lot of it is any environment that respects the capacity of children. You know, I worked as an elementary school teacher. I taught 4th, 5th, and 6th grades. I also was a gifted and talented teacher teaching K through 6. And I can't believe how smart kids are, how creative they are, how unbelievable they are. And where it really comes out is when they're working together, when they're collaborating and they're bouncing ideas off each other and they're celebrating the strengths of each student. And the beauty in that type of an environment is, you know, if all we do is focus on the academic in our schools, we figure out who the really academically strong students are. When we allow kids kind of a broader reach, what we find are the talents in all of those kids. And there's nothing quite like seeing students celebrate one another's strengths while supporting their weaknesses. Kids will do that for each other. So again, another long-winded answer on what I would create, but it would be something along those lines.
No, but it's a key point, you know, not everybody's not going to look successful in the traditional sense. So that idea of creating space and creating teams where kids could collaborate, work in a variety of ways to demonstrate their excellence, their expertise, their pockets of greatness, you're just going to get good stuff as a result. And so that's what you did, and that's what you got. Hey, going back to the meetings real quick, I just have to ask, because I know this is a fear of school leaders, what you want me to do away with the meetings and cut them down to 5 minutes or get rid of them altogether. How many of your schools burned down in the middle of the year because of this?
None of my schools. Yeah, we survived. And I'll say this. I would say we probably met once a month at the most.
Gotcha.
So even then we were what I told the teachers is, if I can communicate everything you need to know via the daily memo on my door or the through email or some other channel, if I can communicate that, I'm not going to call you together. You know, I just won't, unless it's something where we all have to come together to have that meeting. So it was a standing every Monday morning. Everybody knew that you had to be present. If I called the meeting, I expected you to be there. Right. But more often than not, I didn't call it. And none of our nothing bad happened. We survived.
I just don't want to assure all the listeners that the school's not going to explode or anything like that once you stop wasting teachers' time.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're getting to the end of the show. Just a few more questions. Outside or in addition to Reclaiming the Classroom, what is one book you would suggest every principal read right now and why?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I don't, you know, what I would hope people would read is a variety of things. I wouldn't give one specific book. And I thought about this from the standpoint of, I think one of the things we have to be is open to reading things that we don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah.
Because I think what we do is so common in education is we get locked into a single way of thinking that our way is the right way, or there's one right way to do this. I used to read a lot of books that, agreed with my philosophy. And over the last 5 or 6 years, my job has been to travel around the country and work with schools like Brooks. And one of the humbling elements of that is to realize that, you know, teachers around this country are all, I think, engaged in wanting to work, you know, see the best come from what they do with students, but they're working in environments where the philosophies are sometimes very different than my own. And so I think anytime you can read something that helps kind of expand your perspective, even if it doesn't change your mind, is a good thing. And that, you know, that sounds like a cop-out answer, but that's kind of where I stand. I have a shelf full of books. I don't know that it's funny because there are books like I read On Common Ground, which really helped define a lot of what I believe in education. But I think my personal philosophy has expanded greatly beyond just that kind of mindset, that I think I'm much more open to the ideas of others simply because, you know, I'm not trapped into thinking about it from just my perspective. And I think that's important.
Yeah. Important and powerful. Maybe if I rephrase it this way, is there a book that you've given away the most?
Yes, this is going to date me. It's going to make me sound old. There's a couple. I used to give, Harry Wong's book, you know, The First Day of School or whatever. I used to give that book out a lot. And the reason why is because I think it's practical.
Yes.
And I think so much of what is written in education is so philosophical, and in some ways it almost sets people up to fail. Okay. Because it's this idea that there's a magic solution to solving our problems in schools. And I don't believe there is. I think the work we do is so complicated that we could all work hand in hand together for the next, you know, 1,000 years. And what we would find is it's always going to be difficult. It's always going to be a challenge. And anybody who tells you that just do, you know, 1, 2, and 3 and magical things will happen, it just isn't there. And so I always thought that Harry Wong's book was a really good book. I also liked Ron Clark's book, the Essential 55. Yeah, the Essential 55 or whatever.
Yeah.
I liked it because I think that it brought out the right mindset in especially young teachers. You know, in having high expectations for kids, but being respectful of kids as well. Those two books I used to give out all the time, you know, and they're not, I don't think they're deeply philosophical. I think they're deeply practical. And I don't think they paint education, as a simple problem to solve. I think that they set it up in a very practical way. I personally would hope that teachers would read books like that and take them for what they are, not as a recipe or a guidebook to say you have to do it this way, but these are good suggestions that I think are well proven. So again, both pretty old books, but ones that I think stand the test of time.
Oh, absolutely. And the funny thing about the Wong book, it's on the shelf. I should take a picture and put it in the show notes, I think. When I got that in college, I felt offended, and that was my own junk and feeling too good, you know what I mean, about myself.
Yep.
And I'm like, what is this? This is for little kids. First days of school? Forget it. And the second I got my first teaching job, that was the text I ran to. And even as a veteran teacher that I had, one thing I don't lack is confidence. I was a great teacher. I know it. Everybody knows it. And I loved connecting with kids. That's what I did. I could relate to my students. And that's what helped me be an awesome educator. Even when I was a 15-year-old veteran teacher, I read The First Day of School by Wong before each school year, because it was just like, okay, yeah, and most of it I knew, but it was just a helpful refresher. And that, hands down, is a great book for all educators.
You know, it's funny that you said it the way you did, because I think I was very similar. I went into the profession wildly overconfident, wildly assured. And the funniest thing was, in my district, the first week of school, my first year of teaching, they brought Harry Wong in. And I remember listening to him and tuning him out.
Oh,
because
no.
So much of what he said was stuff that, you know, I'd learned in my first year of my ed program in college. And I was like, yeah, I know all that stuff and whatever. It was, but we all got a signed copy of the book, you know, and I put it on my shelf. And as I struggled my first year, I remember probably halfway through the year pulling that book out and reading it and going, oh my gosh, I wish I had like somehow been able to, you know, ground myself in the beginning and lose a little bit of my ego.
Yeah.
Because if I had to start over right now, I would grab onto these things and do a better job of doing what he talks about. So it's funny because I didn't take it seriously until I was getting my butt kicked.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it was a good reminder of stuff that I had learned in college, stuff that I knew. But the daily grind of teaching had somehow caused me to, you know, forget.
Right. Trenton, what do you do for fun?
Well, I have two amazing kids, beautiful wife, and this is going to sound terrible, but I like to do a lot of active things, but my favorite thing in the world is binge watch television with my wife.
Any specific show recently?
We just finished Brotherhood, which, you know, you're delving deep into television series when you're going that route, but it's like everything. We were excited to see, we don't binge watch The Walking Dead.
Okay.
We have to watch that in real time. So we were excited when that premiered last night, but any TV series, some TV series, we just let go until they're done. I don't mind letting it run for a long time. We've got to finish Downton Abbey, We didn't watch the last season of that, but it's like, you name it. We love to, sit on the couch on a Saturday or Sunday night and just veg. I think that's what we as educators sometimes need to do, to just let our minds get away from the work.
Gotcha. You know, normally here I ask guests about a deserted island and three guests you would bring and why, just to get, a little more idea of their personality. But instead, for the first time ever on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, we are going to tie this to The Walking Dead. Trenton, if the zombie apocalypse is happening right now, what is your exit plan? How are you going to survive? Go.
I think I'm running right out in the road and just saying, take me now. I think that I don't know that I have it in me to want to rough it in the way that those guys have done. So I think I would be a quitter. I think
bless
that sounds
heart.
Terrible.
Yeah,
it sounds terrible. Maybe I wouldn't, but cow. Yeah, no, I don't know. I think I might just run right out in the street and say, take me.
I appreciate the honesty. Just no doubt about it. No, there was no hesitation in that answer. Running straight, just bite me. Okay, get it over with.
Yeah, let's do this.
All right. Well, you made it, buddy. This is the last question of the show. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by your budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create this school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building the school?
I can tell you the number one priority is easy. It's hiring really great people. I don't think that any administrator, and because we're talking about administration, I think any administrator who doesn't realize that success or failure in your school is predicated on the quality of teachers that you have in your building is nuts. You know, you've got to have good teachers. And that would be my number one priority, would be actively seeking really high quality teachers. I think the second thing that I would really want to do is I'd want to be in an area where the work that we do matters the most. I've worked in lots of different environments. I was principal of a magnet gifted and talented school in a fairly affluent area. I was principal of a Title I school in a very low income area. And I like that feeling of really making a difference and doing something that matters and providing opportunity in places where opportunities don't necessarily exist. And so I'd want to be in an environment where I felt like we could really do something like that. And so I think the students that I was able to serve and work with would be a high priority. And I think the last thing that I would want priority wise would be able to have a curriculum that was respectful of the kids that we worked with. One that was driven by, like I talked about, that kind of project based environment where we really celebrate the whole child. To me, it's something I long for in education. I think that in many ways we've kind of lost sight of what schools are for. Schools are for kids. You know, they're about helping to nurture little people and hopefully help them become amazingly accomplished adults in whatever pursuit they choose. I think we sometimes throw around terms like college and career ready without really stopping to think about what that truly means. I think that for me, it's not about thinking about college and career ready. It's a much more humanistic approach to thinking about, you know, what can we do to help kids find their place in this world where they can, you know, be fulfilled and live happy, productive lives. And I think that's the more we can do to expose kids to a lot of different elements of themselves and of their colleagues and, you know, their peers, I think we'd have a much better world, you
Absolutely.
Know, if we were more respectful of that. You know, I think sometimes we get caught up in channeling kids down a certain path when in reality, I don't know that that's our job. You know, I think our job is to channel kids down a path that works best for them. So that would be it. I'd want amazing teachers. I'd want to work with incredible kids, and I'd want to create an environment where we could celebrate their abilities.
Love it. Trenton, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
No, other than Daniel, you're doing great work, And I can say that I've been out to your school. I love you guys out there. I think you guys are doing amazing stuff. I think you guys don't just talk the talk. I think you guys walk the walk. Some pretty special people at your school, yourself included. And I feel honored to have been on the podcast. You can always get a hold of me at trenton@masteryconnect.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook as well.
So better leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Trenton. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Trenton in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. On most mobile phones, you can tap on the cover art and the show notes page will magically appear. Trenton, thank you for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better. Hey, better leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Do you want to be awesome? I know you do. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the show some love link. That'll bring up a page where you can leave a review. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, and I would love to connect with you, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries. Connect with me via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or the website betterleadersbetterschools.com.